from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, good evening, everyone. We're going to sit down tonight and go over 2008. 2008 will disappear in a day and a half or so. But we here at Scared Monkeys Radio at ScaredMonkeys.com and other blogs like Women in Crime, Justice Interrupted, and many, many others have covered so many high-profile cases over the year. I thought it would be good, and we've done this each and every year, to sit down and do a year in review, so to speak. So I would like to introduce you to Red, who is the managing editor, the owner of ScaredMonkeys.com, and of course you know Robin Sachs as a ADA out of Los Angeles County, a frequent guest on the show, and someone who I respect very much as far as her ability and her knowledge of these high-profile cases we're going to talk tonight. Welcome to you both.
Hi, Dana. How are you doing, Dana?
I'm good, Red. I'm good, Robin. Robin is on the road to Palm Springs, I believe. I feel terribly sorry for her in, you know, going to Palm Springs here in where I live. I think the wind chill is minus 38 tonight, and we're expecting a small blizzard. I'd go to Palm Springs in about 6 seconds, although I don't think Robin will come here, would you?
75 degrees.
The year in review, I want to start with Red. 2008, I think it went really fast. I appreciate all the support that you and others, Doug, Class, everyone at Scared Monkeys has given me. I thought we worked really well this year on the radio show. We covered a ton of cases. We're going to get into those in a little bit. But I wanted to start with you, Red, and get some thoughts from you about ScaredMonkeys.com and 2008.
Well, Dana, I mean, we've had a, you know, it just starts off from the very beginning with what we realized in 2008, so similar to 2007, is crime does not stop and the insanity only continues. You know, at Scared Monkeys, we post on, you know, missing persons, crime. We also do a lot of politics, and I certainly am not going to bore the living daylights out of Robin with a lot of the politics and stuff. And the
between the forums.
Oh, trust me. You don't want to get me going on that. Between the forums and the front page, we've had probably 5 million visitors this year, and it looks like probably around 45 to 50,000 page views.
Yeah.
What am I saying? 50 million page views, which it just goes to show you, which a lot of the TV, a lot of the print publication and newspapers are suffering because a lot of people are turning to the web for their news. And not, you know, because they can participate, and because their voice can be heard.
You know, and it's so important. You talk about the millions and millions of people that read the forum, and I'm going to blow my own horn here a little bit. Looking at the statistics just before the show, we're pushing almost a million listeners on the radio channel, too, and I think that's just fantastic. And it just shows you, and it shows everyone out there, that we are an alternative to mainstream media. Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles, a regular guest on my program. She also co-hosts Justice Interrupted on Tuesday nights. Are you doing a show tonight? How could you do both?
No, we are not. We took a 2-week hiatus to spend time with our friends and family and enjoy the rest of the year, and also you know, want to make sure that I was available to you guys, because you guys are truly our inspiration in terms of being able to capture cases that are both publicized by mainstream media and not publicized by mainstream media, and having amazing guests and amazing perspective. And we appreciate the work that you guys do all year long.
Oh, certainly. Thank you for that. And let's get right to work. We have an hour. We're going to cover what we can. We actually have a list of 14 different topics. I'm not sure if we'll get to all of them, but we would be totally remiss tonight without starting with the Anthony case read. Casey Anthony is currently sitting in jail on murder charges. Sadly, Kaylee Anthony, or the remains of Kaylee Anthony, have been found. The story is about a quarter over, in my opinion. We've got a lot more to come. We've had everything from loudmouth media people to bounty hunters to lots of speculation to even you and I got into this a little bit, got badmouthed a little bit on the internet and in public. We have Tim Miller, Texas EquiSearch, you name it. This story has been unbelievable. Your thoughts?
Well, every year, Dana, it seems that one missing person's case seems to dominate the news, and in this year, it was Kaylee Anthony. The mere fact that it was a two-year-old child that went missing, that, you know, as angelic a picture as you could possibly possibly see, and then all of a sudden, you know, girl goes missing, mom never reports it, suddenly grandmother reports it nearly a month after the child's missing. It has all the pieces of what a story would have, what would draw people's interest, and you know, and from after that, we suddenly get the insanity of the information coming forth. Parents kind of at first doing the utterance of, you know, their trunk smells like death. Yeah. Then they circle the wagons to protect the daughter. And next thing you know, you've got the public outcry of, where's the justice for Kaylee? And ever since then, and I think you and I have gone over this, it's become a three-ring circus in many respects. Some people have the best of intentions, and other people don't. I know that our readers and your listeners want justice for Kaylee, and I think they really know. I think we all have common sense and can see this one. The case isn't all that different than so many that we've covered in the past. And I think, and I'm sure Robin has covered numerous stories and prosecuted stories like this.
You know, and we'll get into a story that also dominated the headlines, not so much in the early part of 2008, but certainly later on. But Robin, when you see an Anthony case, the Caseys, the Kayleys, you've commented on it on this show and many others. It's far from being over. I think the last time you and I talked, we agreed that this case is nowhere near going to trial, and it'll be quite some time before it even does. But from your perspective, both as a commentator and as a DA, how do you think the media did with and is doing with covering the Anthony case?
Well, I think that when you look at the Anthony case, and besides all of the facets that Fred just mentioned, which make it, you know, fruit for commentating, I think that the part that drives this case, which I think is going to drive some of your other stories that we're going to talk about, is the difficulty that people have in wrapping their minds around a mother being able to murder her child, whether it was, you know, accidentally or however it ended up going down, which is what we're looking forward to finding out in the coming year, I'm hoping. But to have someone who is so unaffected and so removed and unbonded with their child, this isn't a stranger case. This isn't a serial rapist case. This isn't a serial murder case. This is a mother who has gone to great lengths to cover murder and then to cover up with the help of her parents. And the part that really just speaks to me, and probably to you as well, is that there's this grandfather, George, who we just don't hear that much about, but he's a cop.
Yeah.
And I think there's so many fascinating elements that have yet to be really exploited, frankly, that really the part that I think that makes everybody across the country so fascinated by this is you've got this angelic little girl who's, you know, beautiful green eyes stare at you from every computer, you know, web page, and no one can answer the question, why.
Yeah, that is so true. And, Red, all the stories that we've covered in 2008, one of the biggest aspects, whether it's a missing person or a homicide case or whatever, is our admiration and our sympathy towards the family. We'll compare this case to the Holloway case in a little bit, but this case is different when it comes to that sympathy for the family, because it has just turned south and twisted another direction, and all of a sudden there's a complicity alleged with the brother and grandma and grandpa, and that feeling of sympathy is not there for the family. There's only one true victim in this case, and that's little Kaylee. Your thoughts?
Well, Dana, I mean, the family unfortunately brought this on themselves.
Right.
Anybody can see from the very beginning that if, and I'm not going to say if the Anthonys acted properly, because there is no true proper way to act when a child goes missing, but I think we all kind of know in our gut there's a certain demeanor one has. There's a certain sense of urgency. And I think that Cindy Anthony had that sense of urgency in her first and second 911 calls she made.
Yep.
And honestly, I mean, and I don't think that any family is trying to garner the public sympathy in a case like this, but I can honestly say from the many people that read the site and listen to you, that the public outcry would have been complete support for the Anthonys.
Yep.
They would have wrapped themselves around this family as they did with the Holloways, and they would have been their greatest supporters. But instead, you have as soon as the 911 call was made, it was a circling of the wagons. It was protect Casey at all costs. It was they're going to support her no matter what. And it just became a situation where most people couldn't stomach, because they were, you know, they were like, why are you protecting Casey when you should be protecting the two-year-old who was completely dependent upon this family? And one of the questions I put forth to Robin in her years of prosecuting crimes is, have you ever seen a missing persons case where everyone in the family lawyered up?
Yeah.
If there weren't guilty people, if they didn't do something wrong. And, you know, the only ones that I have ever seen in the past, someone was always accused of a crime.
Yeah, exactly. Your thoughts, Robin, on the family aspect of this case?
Well, I have not ever seen a case where every single member of a family ended up lawyering up as a result of a missing person case and a murder case or even a rape case. I mean, and I've been involved in many, many sexual assaults where mothers were dealing with Department of Children and Family Services potentially losing parental rights and still didn't lawyer up. So this is quite a new twist on the whole case. I think that, you know, anything to distract the attention from Casey is something that the Anthonys are doing in terms of trying to, you know, have everyone look at every other possibility. And also to distract everyone from the fact that Kaylee is, you know, been found to be murdered, and, you know, we know that she's no longer with us. So now, you know, as much as the Anthonys can do to distract everyone, they will continue to do that. That's what they've been doing all along.
And, you know, you go back to the class case, and I know you're close with Mark, the parent that comes forward and says, polygraph me, let's get this out of the way, I had nothing to do with this, I want to find my child. I think that's the consummate example of someone who, you know, a family member whose main concern was to find their child. But when you look at the Anthonys, and I agree with Red completely, and I'll turn this back over to Red, when you hear Grandma, initially on the 911 calls and the panic in her voice to Grandma today, to Cindy today, which, you know, I've interviewed her a couple times on the program here in 2008. It's a completely different person. One thing that I will agree with Leonard Padilla is that Cindy Anthony is in complete denial and George Anthony is just kind of cowering in the corner. Am I wrong?
You know, Dana, it almost makes you wonder. You can say it's denial, then it gets to a point where it almost goes beyond denial. I can understand someone trying to protect their daughter. But then it becomes a situation of, wouldn't you sooner and more ought protect your granddaughter?
Yep.
Than you would your daughter. The denial aspect of it almost gets to a point of, it probably will get to a point of obstruction of justice,
mm-hmm.
when Cindy and George almost went out of their way to try to prevent searches for bringing Texas Equisearch in there. And, I mean, I know this, you know, for a fact, because we were a part of the bringing Texas Equisearch into the game.
Yep.
And we were going to do anything humanly possible to get experts down there to help look for this two-year-old. And for the grandparents to come out and say they were only going to look for a live Kaylee, I mean, that's borders on insanity. I would have loved to have been proven wrong. I love to get proven wrong in missing persons cases when people show up alive. Sadly, there was nothing in this case that was ever going to say that. And they just went on and on with this charade. And it gets to the point where you say to yourself, sure, are you supposed to have a positive attitude as a family and hope to God that the child is alive? Of course you are. Are you supposed to do that same thing behind the scenes and kind of mislead investigations and kind of become a deterrent to a search? I hardly think so.
You know, there are parallels, and just a few, and I want to try and clarify what I'm saying and why I'm saying it, in my opinion, between the Anthony case and the Holloway case. And in my opinion, Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County, they're both such high-profile cases, and I think both have done so much to educate the public as far as missing persons go, although the circumstances are different. You have Aruba with a corrupt justice system, bunch of bunglers. You have Orange County and the Orlando Police, Sheriff's Department, etc., who are doing an exceptional job. But I think, Robin, both cases do parallel somewhat because the public is mesmerized by both. Your thoughts?
Well, actually, I think that there's that parallel, but the parallel that I have drawn in my mind, which also partly is a bit about what Red said in terms of the leading to a bit of insanity, is that what is fascinating here in terms of similarity is the apple does not fall from the too far from the tree syndrome that what we've got going on here, both in terms of Cindy and George, Anthony's behavior, in terms of how they are acting. It's kind of no wonder that they have a daughter like Casey.
Mm-hmm.
Same goes with Joran Vandersloot. Look at his parents. Look how they acted. Look what they've gone to cover up and hide for them.
That's a good point. I think
that there's a greater parenting lesson here in terms of what we really have to question. What length are we going to go to protect our children? And why is it that it's the media and the public outcry that has to really turn people and put pressure on to parenting and doing the job that parents are supposed to do?
Yeah, I think Beth Holloway wouldn't like me saying this right now, Red, but I think when you look at Beth Holloway, Dave Holloway, and that family, they are the examples of true grieving parents, true parents whose goal in life is to move mountains to find their child, not to obstruct and to cover up. Would Beth be mad at me for saying that?
Beth would never be mad. She gets mad at a couple things. That would never be one of them. I mean, as you know, as all the listeners know, I'm very close with Beth.
Yep.
She actually was down in Orlando during Labor Day.
Yep.
helped with the search for Kaylee, where I got a chance to meet with her after a long time apart. And one thing that I realized in talking to her and getting a chance to actually spend, 5, 6, 7 hours with her, which usually never happens these days, is that she's just as much hurt today,
yeah,
and driven as she was back in 2005. And the pain that you see on her face and some of the comments that she makes from time to time, you know, which 95% of the stuff I ever discuss with Beth never makes it to the pages of Scared Monkeys or on the radio. It is amazing to me that she still has that inner drive, that will to go to, you know, to find answers, and she is not going to stop at anything. And that's, I think, what all of us would love out of one of our parents to do and know if we ever went missing. I mean, it's, you know, a lot of people don't understand it, a lot of people don't know it, but she is a absolute, it's amazing the drive this woman has. And for all the people who do follow the case, you know, there's a lot still going on behind the scenes. We're just all not at liberty to talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. Robin Sachs, the Holloway case is another case that we've covered extensively and talked about and reported about on Scared Monkeys radio. And 2008 brought new witnesses, searches in the ocean, undercover sting operation tapes, confessions. It looks like there will be a movie now. Prosecutors who say they want to do something, then say they don't. Television hosts who try to investigate cases and wait several months before they bring the so-called evidence to air. This story also, it's been 3 years now, or more than 3 years, has captivated the world. And I want to get your thoughts on the Holloway case 2008 and how we and you and others have covered it.
Well, I think that there's been good and bad in the developments in 2008. I think we would all agree. You know, the good is that there has still been public interest, public outrage, and, you know, the desire to see some closure to this case and to put at least some pressure on Aruba to do something. Unfortunately, we haven't seen that come to pass other than in our good commentating here in the United States, and of course Canada to you too, in terms of being able to publicize this case. But I think what people need to know, and looking at someone like Beth Holloway, is that, and there are other people like them, Mark Class is another individual, yep. Don Walsh, of course, which has also been a development in 2008, but also just the commitment of turning one's negative experiences and worst possible imaginable life experiences that none of us can even dare try to even comment on. But taking those to then be there for other people is truly something that I think of as a highlight of 2008. I mean, if you see Beth Holloway looking for, you know, being involved in the Haley Anthony search, I mean, that is a testament to her pain and what she's gone through, and also a message that there's a community out there, and a lot of your listeners I know are part of that community, and I know my Facebook is filled with friends who are, you know, other people out there where there are missing people, and there are, what this just says and brings into focus is that there are so many people who have not been found, who have been missing, who have been, you know, presumed to be dead and so forth. And yet we still don't have closure, and hopefully we'll see some answers. I don't think that in 2009 we're going to get any closer, because if we look at the shoddy work that they've been doing over there in Aruba and the way it's been going down, it doesn't appear that we're going to get to any sort of legal closure, but at least in terms of a psychological closure, in terms of the bonding, I think is something that we can highlight as something that is an amazing thing from 2008.
Red, you're probably next to the family, the person closest to the investigation that I know. I've talked to the investigators and done dozens of shows. Jossie Mansour is, in my opinion, the salt of the earth. You know, the other people that we've brought on the program. But I want to get your thought before we switch over to another topic on how the media has covered Holloway in 2008, especially most recently with the Van Susteren show, with bringing Joran on for his most recent confession of human trafficking, DeVries, etc. He was another interview on 2008, during 2008 here on the program. A class act, a good guy, someone who really wants to do something. But overall, how has the media done with Holloway in 2008?
one of the interesting things that I think happens in 2008 with the media kind of going off on their way covering politics, you know, presidential election, obviously they're going to go gung-ho with that. The most interesting part about it is it was Jorn Vandersloot who brought the story back into the media's attention.
That's true.
Not once, but twice.
Yeah.
And I would agree with Robin saying that, you know, we may not get a legal answer in 2009, but one of the interesting things that happened in 2008 was the swing of public opinion for even those who supported Jorn. I mean, who supported him in God knows how, but they did. They turned on him because he really showed himself to be a lying sack of garbage, capable of just being completely evil. Not once in a confession, but twice in a confession. And the media, in covering it, do I agree with them 100% in how they did it? No. I think sometimes they have the right idea in mind, but then again, the almighty ratings come into play. Greta doing her interview was a little bizarre in the sense that she sat on it. It's not very often that Joe Tacopino and I agree on anything, and I truly appreciate tonight that we have a prosecuting attorney doing the show and not a defense attorney. but the fact that it remains in the media, and the fact that the media realizes that it still garners attention, is probably very important to the case. But getting back to something that Robin, to touch on something Robin said, I spoke to Tim Miller a long time ago with this case, and actually spoke to the family in the very beginning of this case as to what the legacy of Natalie would be. And did I think it would ever be solved the way it was going, and knowing the way that Aruba operates? I had my doubts,
right,
from the very beginning. But the idea that these cases are cumulative. Beth helps another family. I know Dave has done searches for missing people with Texas Equisearch. Those people then in turn help other people. And it's kind of it's that fraternity that nobody wants to be a member of, but these people all seem to come together and help each other out because they know nobody else can probably know what their pain is like, and they certainly want to help those that have fallen into the same trap of doing nothing wrong in their life except having a missing child.
Yeah, I want to comment briefly on Texas Equisearch, and in particular the Anthony case. Tim Miller, who, again, another person who I consider to be the salt of the earth, I've had many a conversation with Tim on air and off air, is about as good a guy as you're going to get. He is passionate, he is kind, he's also human. And how he and his group, including you, Red, and others, can go day to day and work and search for the missing, and yet be able to sit back and take some of the flack that gets thrown out. And I'm not going to ask you, either one of you, to comment on this, is beyond me, and it just puts that organization and the people involved with it on a higher pedestal. If you're just tuning in, this is Scared Monkeys Radio, a year in review, 2008. Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County, is here. And Red, the managing editor / owner of ScaredMonkeys.com, is here, and we're talking about some of the high-profile cases that we covered in 2008. And I would be remiss without bringing up Drew Peterson. Drew Peterson, who has... Listen, I'm not mocking or making fun of anything that Drew Peterson is alleged to have been a suspect for or a person of interest in, but Drew Peterson has probably been one of the most hated yet popular guests on this program in 2008. His attorney, Joel Brodsky, and he have been on the show many times. I've sat down and I've talked to Drew on air, off air, but Robin Sachs, you have to admit that this case, as long as it's gone on now, is another one that kind of goes off the bizarre Richter scale, does it not?
Well, I think that we definitely reached new levels when we found out that Mr. Peterson is now engaged. That really just added the, you know, final thrill to 2008, as far as I'm concerned, of like, oh my God, I can't believe that is so. However, I think the most disappointing thing that I'm seeing is that here I thought we would be at this point announcing indictments and gearing up for trial, and we have yet to see that. So there's a little bit of disappointment as far as I'm concerned in terms of 2008, in terms of how Drew Peterson has concluded this year. But he never ceases to amaze us in giving us a show whenever there's a camera or a microphone in front of him, and I'm sure he will continue doing that in 2009.
Red, I can think of two people that when I send you off my little email saying I'm going to have guests on, that you probably had to grab at your chest a little bit or take a deep breath or blink your eyes. One is Drew Peterson and the other is Joe Tacopina. But I've had them both on, and I'm just curious in your thoughts on the Drew Peterson.
Luckily, Dana, my nitrate tablets were next to the computer. Oh, boy. No, they Drew is a piece of work.
Yeah.
For somebody who is accused of committing the crimes that he has, it is it's almost scary.
Yep.
The circus type atmosphere that surrounds this guy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Casey Anthony, accused of a similar crime. Of course, her crime is against a baby, which, end of story, they can have all the Dream Team people in the world. They're never going to get beyond that.
Yep.
That being said, Drew Peterson is either one of the most vile human beings in the country, or he is just the most amazing happenstance, circumstance person that's ever walked. The announcement of his pending nuptials was kind of a cherry on the cake for 2008. But you know, you look at it and you say to yourself, the guy's making a joke of all this.
Yep.
And I think that's what kind of turns people's stomachs a little bit. You know, they're all given a presumption of innocence. That's fine. But when you start acting like that, that's the same reason why Joran Vandersloot doesn't get the benefit of the doubt, because too often he's acted smarmy, acted just that you want to slap him upside the head. Well, you know, Drew Peterson's kind of doing the same thing, and I can respect his. I mean, I actually kind of like his lawyer when he comes on.
Oh yeah, yep.
For a defense attorney, because he's doing his job.
Yep.
And I mean, I can respect that. Joe Tacopino, I don't know if I can respect that, but you know, he has a place. And what I would truly respect, though, is if Joe Tacopino went on with Red, because he's been ducking me for years.
Right. And maybe we can work that out in 2009. Robin Sachs, actually, you guessed it on the show. You were the balancing act, I guess, on the defense attorney program that we did in 2008, where we brought on Joe Tacopina and Joel Brodsky, and who else did we have on? Mark Garagos. Yeah, and it was a show where I wanted to bring on the defense attorneys where their clients are just so hated and so vile as far as the public concern, and to bring a different side as far as the defense attorney goes to the airwaves, because you see the lawyer, you see their client, you hate the client, so you automatically hate the lawyer. And you were part of that program, and I'd like to talk about that program a little bit, because I got a lot of different comments about that show, and I'd like to do something else like that in 2009. It's something that you don't see too often.
I thought it was a great, great program. I do think, I think when you look at defense lawyers and you look at their clients, and actually all kinds of lawyers, you see this in family court as well, and anybody who's ever had to hire a lawyer, probably would personally be able to relate to this, but they're prosecutors and public defenders. They're assigned to you, and they come, you know, through the matrix in whatever way the county decides to dole out their cases. When you deal with private attorneys, there's an interviewing process that goes on, and not only do you have to have confidence in someone's work ability, but you have to be able to relate to them on some sort of personal level and bond with them in some sort of way. And to me, it's not very surprising when you see a defendant, and a high-profile client is no exception to that, picking and choosing and bonding with a lawyer that is very much like them.
Mm-hmm.
I find many, many times narcissistic defendants, which most rapists, murderers, and those types are, find themselves with narcissistic-type lawyers. You know, there are defendant suspects who love the camera, and you may not find it surprising that their lawyer counterparts love the camera as well. You're not going to, a lot of times, clients drop their lawyers or lawyers drop their clients because they don't see eye to eye in how a case is being handled, and that's because they have fundamentally different philosophies. So the interesting part of that program was, what kernels could we see about the suspects that may have come through and been portrayed through their lawyers?
Red, this is Scared Monkeys Year in Review 2008, and one case that I know you guys covered at ScaredMonkeys.com, and we covered here on the show, was the case of Lori Drew and Megan Meyer. And, you know, you sit back and we talk about the internet and we talk about blogs and we talk about how great a job that, you know, that the blogs do, how we're an alternative to the mainstream media. But this is a case, and you actually titled it A Miscarriage of Justice, and it's so true, of the young girl and the death, the bullying on MySpace. And let's talk about that evil side of the internet. It's not the internet's fault, but the evil things that can be done, because there is a dark side out there.
Well, the internet, Dana, provides the vehicle,
right,
which, like anything, can be used for good, can be used for evil. Those that use the internet responsibly, hey, more power to you. What we really saw, and you talk about something that was really prevalent in 2008, was the internet explosion of Facebook, of MySpace accounts, of voyeurism, of just people doing stupid things and not thinking that there's consequences to their actions. And the case of that you're referring to is the worst, because you have an adult going online. Oh, let me say, allegedly.
Right.
Going online, pretending that they're young, and harassing a minor to the point where she hangs herself.
Yep.
And then, because the laws are not up to speed with the internet superhighway, you have a person basically getting off with a hand slap, that and a absolutely illiterate jury who couldn't do the right thing. I mean, I'm sorry. I mean, I love the internet. I love free speech. I'm one of the internet's biggest defenders. But there comes a point in time where personal responsibility, would this have happened without the internet? Probably, because if evil is in someone's heart, they're going to find a way to inflict it upon another human being. But in this particular case, I almost can't, in retrospect, blame the person who did it, blame the lame jury who allowed this to be put forth. I have to blame the lawmakers. Where mm-hmm. These people better start doing something. I mean, I don't know what they're getting paid for these days, except maybe selling Senate seats. I mean, they have a job to do to create laws to protect your constituents and pass bills. How long have we been dealing with the internet? It's not like this thing, it's not like Al Gore just invented it the other day.
Right.
I mean, come on. I mean, we see crimes all the time. It's like, when will the laws catch up to cyberbullying? How many times do we have to see some guy or girl get beaten up on a YouTube video?
Yep.
I mean, the stupidity of this and the consequences of what these kids are doing are going to impact them for years to come. Search engines, I always, you know, the little tagline I use, search engines are unforgiving.
Yeah, no, it is so true, Robin Saxon, and this is part of your expertise. You get the internet cases, you get young, impressionable girls, and how they think. They have to be popular, they want to have a boyfriend, they want to be friends, and the predators, and in this case, the alleged bullying that led to the child's suicide. You, as a prosecutor and as a child safety expert, Robin, what can we do more? I think it's education, education, education. I know you have written books on that, but what can we do more, especially here in the media, on my show and others?
Well, first of all, I ditto everything that Red said. I mean, I think that it's amazing how long it takes for legislation to catch up with technology, and technology will continue to, you know, double and triple in speed, and will still be way behind. I mean, stalking and internet being used for stalking and text messaging, and now all the new, technological advances. It's unbelievable to me that, you know, I'm sitting here driving, freaking out that I'm going to get a ticket for not using a headset, but yet the Lori Drew case can happen and nothing happened to her. In terms of prevention, the way I like to look at the internet is that one of the things that we need to do as an adult community is to embrace the internet. I think that what has happened is that when people hear about these types of cases, the immediate reflexive answer is, I am going to forbid usage of the internet. I'm not going to let my child on the internet. I'm going to forbid these particular websites. They're not allowed to have MySpace, Facebook. They're not allowed to go on YouTube. And frankly, I think that's a wrong approach. I think the fact of the matter is the internet is accessible everywhere, libraries, coffee shops, schools, other people's homes. So forbidding is not going to help. What we need to do is educating, and that starts with parents. And what we need to do is, as parents, need to recognize how much information is right there available for parents at their fingertips if they just were to sign on themselves. Every parent, every listener on this show should have a Facebook, a MySpace account, and they should be adding their kids onto their MySpace and Facebook accounts with friends, and that they can then be able to peruse and see what conversations are going on. You can take the information that you learn from the internet, and, you know, kids put everything up there. It's right there for the taking, and so often we don't go to the most obvious right in front of a source to do that. I can tell you exactly by looking at the internet, you know, which kids are drinking in, you know, my son's senior high class, which kids are doing drugs, which kids are going to party when their parents are out of town. And all I have to do is throw a comment out there and to get a flush of an influx of information from my kids to be able to figure out who's going on and what's going on where. And I think it starts with just, you know, literally signing on, getting acclimated, and not looking at this as some technologically difficult thing to understand, but it's really so simple and such a great form of information that we should be using that to be able to understand and relate with our kids and to bond with our kids. And that goes for law enforcement too. Law enforcement, every single investigator should be looking up their victims, their witnesses' Facebook pages, their MySpace pages. They should be Googling them. They should be Craigslisting them. We can find out tons about the credibility of our victims, witnesses, defendants, and what have you, just by using the tools that are in front of us.
That is so true. This is the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and we're looking back at 2008. Think of your worst horror movie. Think of something you've sat down and read or watched or went to, and you just scared the living hell out of you. Think about riding on a Greyhound bus in Manitoba, Canada, and all of a sudden there's a psycho with a butcher knife, and he starts to behead a passenger. The police, a dark Canadian Trans-Canada Highway, a story we covered a great deal here on Scared Monkeys Radio, and Red covered on scaredmonkeys.com. Let's talk a little bit about Vince Wee Quang Lee, I think I'm saying that right. That's a story that is unbelievable. And I know we've had others over in Germany, and it just seems like today's society is getting sicker and sicker and sicker. Let's talk about the Greyhound case, Red.
you're right. This is right out of Stephen King.
Oh, God, yeah.
I can't even begin to imagine a Greyhound bus, of all things.
Yep.
I mean, we've heard in the past missing persons cases off of buses. We've never quite heard of a decapitation by a fellow passenger going psycho. It just goes to show you, Dana, it doesn't matter whether it's the United States, Canada, Europe, you name it. There are people walking among us that are just insane. And you just don't know who they are. One minute, they could be the passenger on the Greyhound bus. The next minute, they could show up at your door with a Santa outfit on.
Mm-hmm.
It just boggles the mind that the psychosis can get to that point. And I think when we finally look at a lot of these stories, and then when we finally start reading the background and delve more and more into these cases, we tend to see that a lot of this stuff probably could have been prevented. They all have the same MO. There's always things that are so similar with all of these cases that are cries for help, but yet, you know, the way the laws are set up, we can't do anything. I think one of the most bizarre things, and I think I believe his name escapes me, it's your crime buddy up there in Canada,
Mike McIntyre.
Yes, that's it. He was discussing it one night, and it became this scenario where, you know, people started to question the passengers why they didn't do anything.
Yep.
And what it puts you into that position of what would you do confronted with a maniac?
Mm-hmm.
And most people would run. I mean, let's face it, that's what they would do. I think the saddest thing of this was I had only wished that the police had just basically charged the bus and shot the man.
Took him out, yeah.
When they had the chance.
Yeah.
Because nothing said anything in this case that this person really needed to have a trial. And I think even afterwards, when he showed up in court, he asked the judge to kill him.
Yeah. No, and exactly that. And I think, Robin, with these types of oh my God stories, and I'm not trying to be disrespectful, another thing that we covered a great deal here on Scared Monkeys Radio and across the blogs and on other programs, yourself included, are the school teacher cases, school teachers abusing children, the pretty blonde with the boys, and right down to a case that you were personally involved in, the Beltran case. We have to have faith in certain aspects of our society, policemen, doctors, lawyers, school teachers. They say it's a position of trust, but you know, 2008 was a hell of a year for hearing about these sick, twisted stories. And I want you to comment a little bit on the school teacher cases, and in particular on the Beltran case of yours, if you can comment on that one, because that was a big one.
Yes, that was actually, and I'm happy that you parlayed the Greyhound case with that, because I think so often when you hear a case like the Greyhound, which is exactly right, it does feel right out of one of Stephen King's books. If that's kind of the comfort zone where where many, many people in the population just think, oh, you know, that's kind of the quintessential type of case that that's what's going to happen. I fear for my child to go on a bus because that's what's going to happen, and all those stranger cases. But then you deal with the cases like the Beltran case and the other cases similar with teachers and people who trust. And that's really where 85-90% of the crimes are committed against people, by people they know. And the strangers that we know that actually pose the greatest risk, I think, in terms of long-term damage. And we had the Thomas Beltran case, which was a case in which a 30-year veteran from Lincoln Middle School, which is a really high-regarded school on the west side in Los Angeles, who the English as a second language teacher, had sexually assaulted
that we know of, approximately 14 different girls over the period of many, many years. And he ended up pleading guilty to 11 counts last week, which was a great result in every single victim that we knew about. And he even admitted to victims that we weren't able to charge that were outside of the statute of limitations. But what that case showed me, as a prosecutor who walked into Lincoln Middle School on the day before we announced what the actual charges were, there were parents and kids and people rallying around, passing out flyers saying, Mr. Beltran is not guilty, these kids are lying, don't believe them. And the instantaneous opinion and the gut reaction was to automatically disbelieve and ostracize the kids and the victims involved. And yet you have a case like the Graham case, and not without any, lack of respect to any of the victims in that family, but there wasn't any questioning anybody's credibility there.
Yep.
And here you've got this case where a teacher used his position of trust, was involved with kids who were in English as a second language, who were foreign-born. We had victims from Ukraine, China, Korea, Iraq, Mexico, South America, Italy, France, everywhere, and really came in and didn't even know if this was the way of culture in the United States, because that was what their first introduction to our world was. And the fact that the instantaneous belief was to distrust, I'm hopeful that in 2009, when you hear a disclosure, particularly by a teacher or a person who's in a position of trust, I'm not saying rush judgment and convict. But what I'm saying is that there is often much more to the story. And in Mr. Beltran's case, we had video, we had admissions, we had confessions. And even in light of all of that, there were people rallying around and saying that the girls were lying. And that was just an atrocity, but with a good result in the end.
Speaking of atrocities, Red, and something that, John and Mary Sixpack sit back and say, yeah, we don't believe that. That's crazy. That probably doesn't happen. Are the cases of polygamy. I did a couple of special programs on polygamy here on Scared Monkeys Radio, where we actually brought in the victims, people who lived the lifestyle, who were able to escape, who feared for their lives. And Scared Monkeys covered the 52 girls ages 6 months to 17 years that were taken from the polygamous cult. We hear about it. The people like to see it and talk about it, but I don't know if there's that acceptance from, John and Mary Sixpack, that does this really happen? But it's really out there, and it's another thing that, maybe the media didn't cover quite enough. We did what we could here on the radio show, and we'll probably do more next year with it. But your thoughts on the polygamy cases, Rhett?
Polygamy, I mean, Dana, it's almost akin to the human trafficking cases that go on every single day.
Exactly. Yeah.
We don't want to believe the worst in people. As cynical of a society as we are, we don't want to believe that this stuff goes on. But yet, it goes on everywhere. And if people actually knew we just focused on that one compound in Texas. I mean, that's just one. And when the police went in and stormed the castle, for a better term,
mm-hmm.
I almost knew at the time they were doing it, I could read the tea leaves that were saying they're doing the right thing. These people are guilty of sin. There's abuse. There's brainwashing. There's sexual molestation going on here. And yet, they're not going to have enough evidence because somebody somewhere is going to say that they jumped the gun. And that's kind of what happened. We know these things to be wrong. Legally, I guess it's the difference between Robin and I, where, Robin's the attorney. She's got to follow the law. I don't necessarily have to. We create the court of justice of public opinion every single day. We know what smells wrong. And when the girls were obviously abused, I mean, the guests that you had on were, I mean, it was gut-wrenching. And the interviews they were doing with the women on the media, it was gut-wrenching to see the brainwashing that had happened.
Yep.
And they kept calling it polygamy. They kept calling it polygamy, and I kept screaming, what about the pedophiles that are abusing these girls? It's like, this isn't polygamy, folks. We're talking about the abuse of underage girls here. And no one wanted to call it for what it was, because it was almost like it was too dirty for them to cover in the media, truly.
2008, again, when I announced the program this evening and said we had 14 topics, I think we've only covered five or six. The other cases that we've covered here, Eve Carson, Clark Rockefeller, of course, our old friend OJ. We've done some shows here that I don't think you'd ever be able to find on any other radio program. We bring the people to the show that people want to hear, and we give them an opportunity to speak their mind, whether they're victims, whether they're police officers, investigators, profilers, DAs, you name it. We've talked about it. Hell, we even had a guy on the program who had a cup that Elvis gave him and was selling it on eBay. Who can forget the Elvis cup guy? So this is something that we do here on Scared Monkeys Radio that others don't do. And to bring on my guests this evening, Robin Sachs and Red from Scared Monkeys, we've only touched the surface of the stories. And I want to, in our last couple of minutes here, give both Red and Robin an opportunity to talk about what they're going to be doing in 2009. And we'll start with Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County. What's next for you, my dear?
Well, next for me is a continuing on the path of trying my darndest to really work to make sure that justice does not interrupt people's lives. And I could not agree with Red more, where, you know, in court I do need to follow the rules of evidence and those pesky little things like jury instructions and constitutional law and constitutional elements kind of get in the way. But we do know in our hearts many, many, many times what's going on. And the one thing that I'm able to do outside of the courtroom is to be able to speak my mind and have an opinion, and most importantly, connect with amazing people who are doing amazing things in terms of trying to help people in some regard or another. And that, and this year, I look forward to really taking my work to the next level. I have several books. I'm almost embarrassed to say I have 6 books coming out between 2009 and the beginning of 2010. And really, all of them are books that speak to my heart and deal with how to protect children, how to protect people and be better people, highlight the great work of other people, and work with my cohorts, Stacey and Susan from Justice Interrupted, continue with Women in Crime, and continue in the DA's office, and hopefully continue being a regular guest on your show.
Absolutely. Red, Scared Monkeys, even in my time, my short time with you, has evolved into an internet powerhouse of information, whether it's news, politics, high-profile cases. I coined the term a long time ago, Main Street Media. It's not mainstream. It's Main Street Media, where the Joes and the Mary Six-Packs can sit back and actually find out the truth as far as what's going on. What's coming up for Scared Monkeys in 2009?
I think, Dana, we're going to further continue along embracing the technology that we are provided every single day on the internet. Maybe even getting you some video time, even though you say you got a face for radio.
Yeah.
But we sit back and really have to really, truly be in awe of a lot of the things that we've done and accomplished. We've tried to create a community of caring people who not just talk about stories, but get involved. We partner with Texas EquiSearch and Tim Miller to help on searches in whatever capacity we can, whether it's logistics, whether it's people actually searching. A long time ago, I said, you can't just write about it. You got to get involved. And from that, you know, we've managed to be able to have you come on board. And I really want people to take a good look at what you've accomplished in a short amount of time. People don't really realize the star power of the people that you have on your show. There, I mean, there is not a cable show around where you haven't had one of those guests on and actually let them talk and put forth their opinion without cutting them off or telling them their opinion is stupid. Do I always agree with the topics? Of course not.
No.
I'm not supposed to agree with everything. That would be pretty boring. But to be able to deal with Robin, with the women from her site. I mean, they have so much knowledge in these cases. It beats listening to some of the pundits every single day. But then some of those pundits are on the shows, and you actually hear a different side of them when they're on Scared Monkeys versus getting a 15-second clip on a cable show. I mean, we really, truly believe that the Internet can make a difference. It brings people together. It is a vehicle and a community that can basically do wonders if done in the right way. And that's what we truly are going to do. Doug and I are going to sit down probably tomorrow, maybe the next day, and put our little heads together and create some nice mad scientist stuff to just improve it and keep going forward.
Well, you know, not to cut you off, but we're almost out of time. I want to spend a minute or two here, first of all, Red, to thank you and Doug and everyone at Scared Monkeys, first of all, for allowing me to have my weekly radio show spot, my daily commentaries, providing the web space to do that. Of course, my guests like Robin, Stacey Dietrich, Clint Van Zandt, Wendy Murphy, Susan Murphy Milano. I could go on and on and on. And we do hear, I think, what other radio shows don't do is we actually bring the voice of the people to the people and find out what really is going on. I want to also thank all my listeners, both on the Internet, on Access Communications up here in Canada, on cable TV, on satellite, wherever you can pick us up. Without you, we wouldn't have much of a program, and I look forward to 2009 to doing many, many more programs, the type of programs that you want to hear. Robin Sachs, ADA out of Los Angeles County, her recent book, Predators and Child Molesters, What Every Parent Needs to Know to Keep Kids Safe. There's a link to go and buy that book on the show notes. Red, who is the managing editor and owner of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thank you for joining me this evening, and I look forward to working with you both more in 2009.
Thank you, and Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to both of you.
Thank you, Dana, so much.
Okay. Bye-bye. That's it. That's a show for this evening. Our last show for 2008. Make sure and check out ScaredMonkeysRadio.com. That's ScaredMonkeysRadio.com for our daily commentary, archives of past shows, and how you can listen to the show live. We'll see you again in 2009, which is just a couple of days away. Good night, everyone.
Been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of ScaredMonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.